Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 235, recorded January 20th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Welcome to another exciting episode of your favorite crime-fighting fishy heroes.
Oh, I guess we better start fighting crime now.
Yeah, I guess that's maybe raising expectations a little too high. But hey, I laugh like Scooby-Doo, and he's almost a superhero.
I thought he laughs more like...
Yeah, that's practically what I sound like.
No. Okay, well, let's start, shall we?
Okay, we have Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Matt in Perth, Western Australia, and Tony in New York.
So, before we do that, though, I just wanted to shoot out a quick thanks to John from email. I don't know where he's from. And Necrotic Doctor from Twitter.
I don't think email is a city.
I hope not. Not yet.
Not yet.
They gave us a heads up when episode 234 wasn't ready. I mean, it was... I thought everything had been published, but I had forgotten to, you know, flip the proverbial switch. There was something...
You needed one more toggle flip.
...in the track, yeah, that I didn't do right. And so they told me about it, and I was able to fix it.
So thank you.
I also wanted to tell everybody about our Python problem.
Oh, it was a sad...
Not that we have a python like a snake, you know. I'm talking about the water changer.
Yeah.
And so, we've had this python for years and years and replaced various portions of it.
So probably very little of it is still the original python.
I think most of the hose is.
The hose, I think, is about...
But, and maybe even the gravel washer part.
I don't know about that.
I don't know for sure either. But the assembly, and I know the valves, like the switch on and off valve that's close to the gravel washer part, you know, the water changing end of the hose, that has been replaced, probably at least twice. And the part that attaches right to the sink with the venturi in it, all that stuff, that has been replaced. But it broke recently, and we replaced it recently, but it's never
that
actually functioned
part,
well.
And it's the been thing maybe that hooks onto the faucet.
A month and a half. 2 months or something. Hasn't worked very well.
Just so spraying water all
water
over the
changes
place.
Have been messy, and they've taken longer than they should have, and so on. And we had to stop doing them.
Well, we didn't quit doing water changes. We just had to quit using that part.
Right, we had to quit using that part. So
get a different one.
But the problem is, we've had trouble getting the proper parts. Because at the pet store, you can't find the python parts anymore in most of them.
Does the company
here.
Not exist anymore, or they just don't stock them here anymore?
Well, I'm not sure what's going on, but it's harder to find them than it used to be. And there is a part from a different company, because the no-spill clean and fill from the Python is the one that they originally bought. You can find the Aquion corresponding parts made by Aquion in the stores.
Mm-hmm.
But it costs something like $16, $17. And it doesn't look like it will fit in the bathroom sink that we use downstairs. It would probably fit in the kitchen sink, but we have that all set up and with threading on it and stuff for using the Python downstairs. And also the gravity helps us out, too, when we're doing water changes. So we ended up looking online, and I noticed, and I had read somewhere, that the water bed drain and filling kits had essentially the same parts in them. So I looked that up, and you can get that part that looks like it's made by the same company, which I believe, if the Python part itself says Blue Magic on it. If you look up a Blue Magic water bed drain and fill kit, it looks like the same part included with some other superfluous parts, but for $2.01 on Amazon.
Well, plus shipping.
US dollars. And then there's shipping,
I think it was
too.
Like $4 or $5 of shipping.
Right.
But that's still about half of what you pay in the pet store.
Right. It's less than you pay in the pet store. And I like to support local pet stores, but since we've had some issues with that lately, finding the right bit, we're going to try that. And so I ordered that yesterday.
Yep.
And hopefully it'll get here very soon. It has shipped already because I want to make a water change because we couldn't do a water change this past weekend. So anyway, there we go.
So we'll let you know if it works.
Yeah. If you're looking for that particular Python part now, you have an idea where you might get one.
Oh, you know what? There's a poster that isn't in this list. There's a contributor.
Oh, who?
Me!
Oh, okay.
I posted the footprints of Tiki picture on the Facebook page today.
Did you?
Yes. Oh. I don't... You guys have probably... Well, if you go to the Facebook page, you will probably have seen it already, but we were feeding Tiki, our crested gecko, some bugs yesterday, dusted with calcium powder. And I like to feed her, you know, the bugs by hand, or at least, you know, when she's out with us. And so we had the bugs in, like, a little plastic deli cup, and there was some of the excess calcium powder in there. I was falling off of them as they're doing their little buggy jaunts around the deli cups. But she kind of crawls into the deli cups and lunges at them to get them. So the end result was that she had a little bit of calcium powder on her little feet at the end of it, and she crawled back up on my arm out of the cup, and I was wearing a black shirt, so I had like this little tiki trail all the way up my arm, and I was so cute.
And so
I had Russ take a picture.
Oh, can you take a picture right now? And so I did. And
so I put it on the Facebook page today for you all to enjoy and squeal over the cuteness, or if you're not a squealing over cuteness type, just enjoy.
It's a pretty cool picture. I like it.
They were just these perfect little wee footprints on my shirt, and I just thought it was adorable.
When did you post it? Did you post it to the Aquarium X page?
Yeah, right? I posted it to the Aquarium X Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This morning-ish, midday, okay. Something cool. Like that.
Yeah, I hope people have a chance to go check that out. Oh, and you know what else has arrived? Mick knows this, but reptiles are cool.
Just like bow ties. Bow ties are cool.
this
have some fish fingers and custard.
A book written by a friend of Mick's, as I understand it, who is also a vet, who specializes in reptiles, or at least it says she has 20 years experience working with reptiles. She holds a certificate in zoo medicine. It says that right on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a book intended to help, especially directed towards, you know, the younger audience, give them good information on geckos, possible health problems geckos can have, ways to prevent those health problems stuff. It's a really cool book. And
our youngest was reading it the day that it got here.
Yeah. And I've been reading it too. And mm-hmm. it's a fun book, and it's got a lot of great information in it that is accessible to kids, which I think is an important thing, you know, with pet care. A lot of the books that you find are either not very full of information, or they're full of information but too technical for kids to get. But I think this has a good balance because it's accessible to kids, but it's also got a lot of good specific information. Mm-hmm. So
we were excited to get it. Thank you, Mick.
Thank you, Mick. And the mint cake, wow.
It went fast.
So fast. We were going to take a picture.
I opened the package and the kids were just like, mint cake.
So we're going to you should be able to see our picture of us wearing our t-shirts and everything pretty soon.
Yeah,
we'll get that up there.
It's been fun. Okay, I guess we can go to the real contributors now, because I don't really actually count.
Yes, you do. You contribute more to the show than you would readily admit.
I should tickle you. Okay. Mick in Carnforth, UK, of whom we were just speaking. He says, I've just been catching up on the latest couple of shows. Thanks for the info on the morning gecko eggs. I was thinking that if possible, sticking a clean, empty jelly pot over an egg with a few pinholes in it for ventilation might work. I think that I'm more likely to set up a rolling vivarium switch, moving the females from a glass nano to lay, and then into a second one, allowing the babies to hatch unmolested in the first one. I used to use a similar technique for my mouth-brooding betas.
And I think both will work if you can get a shot at the eggs with the clear jelly pot, the clean jelly pot taped over them. I think that'll work great, but it's just, in my experience, they don't lay in positions where you can get them because they're near corners and edges and so on. But I think,
let us know if it works, because that would be cool.
The rotating is probably the most the option you'll be able to employ most easily, just for that reason.
Okay. And then he says, perhaps the next Google Hangout should be a special entitled Terrarimax.
I like that. I love that name.
For all those closet reptile fans out in Aquarimax land, you could always tag it with, it's safe to come out now, you're among friends.
I really like that idea. I think we should do one like that.
Look, if we do the thing at the next Reptile Expo, that could be your banner, Terrarimax.
Maybe so.
Okay, Mick says, a warning to Tony, it starts with a tank, then another, then a bigger one, then a fish room, then a shop, and very little money left in the bank.
But what's fun as money compared to fish?
That's right. I have been thinking of moving my fish/animal room indoors recently. We've had such awful weather lately that trailing to the bottom of the garden to the shed, nice and warm as it is not very enticing. If things were inside, I would be able to spend more time in there and be more diverse with my projects. I have to clear this idea with my family, though, so timing is of the essence. Kept them on a good mood day, yes?
Yeah. I've noticed that, too, that it's so much easier. I was just talking to Kelly about this the other day. If I have things located where I'll be around people, mm-hmm. for me, it's just...
When you're dealing with your isopods or mm-hmm. whatever bug
and
cultures.
I have a cabinet under the goldfish tank, and I love having... I've got various cultures going down under there, springtails and isopods and bean beetles and confused fire beetles and... I don't know. That's probably about it. Under there, and it's in the living room, and so I can just... pop in under there when we're in the living room doing something and everybody's around and it's nice. I mean, it's a different reason from what you cite, but just having it all there in a central location is kind of nice. I like that. And then the Daphnia culture is just a couple of steps. So the Daphnia scud culture, a couple steps away, and Hito, or African clawed frog, is right there above the Daphnia culture. And, you know,
it works out. Mm-hmm. He says, we are hoping to do some breeding work with our corns again this year and hope to have the patter of young leopard gecko feet sometime soon also. We have a breeding pair coming to us at the end of the month. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, go ahead. Were you going to say something?
I just love that image. The patter of young leopard gecko feet.
I know. It's very cute.
Yeah.
We have little tiki feet and little leopard gecko feet.
We need to call this the gecko feet episode.
Gecko feet episode, yes. Okay, I'm just warning you now, I'm going to insert in his next sentence the old Batman theme.
Really? I'm looking forward to this.
So, just a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
He says, and now, after a hiatus of some time, shrimp news! How's that? Is that pretty good?
That's pretty good.
Okay, that was terrible, but that's okay.
No, I liked it.
He said, at long last, I have started a small tank off to breed cherry shrimp again. I have always loved keeping them, and they make a great display in the room, even in just their little tank with Java moss and bogwood. I sell them in the shop, so it makes sense to have some homegrown ones rather than buying them in. He says, hope partial number 2 makes it to you soon, which it did, which is what we talked about. So, best fishes, Mick.
Yeah, good luck with the cherry shrimp. I want to do cherry shrimp again, too. I have a few, but I don't have, like, a...
You don't have
nice
a dedicated
setup for mm-hmm. them. I just have a few that are kind of scattered around, so... Well, I guess I got a few at work. But I want to make a tank that's just dedicated, because they do the best and they look the mm-hmm. best that way. It'll be fun.
So, thanks for writing in, Mick. It was good to hear all your adventures. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Shall we go to Australia?
Yes. Let's go to Western Australia.
Why don't we go to Perth, Western Australia?
Okay.
In fact, while we're there, let's hear from Matt.
Okay. Sounds good.
He says, in response to your query, we were talking about this last week, his fish tanks and temperatures and everything. House. In response to your queries, our house is not air-conditioned. However, it is heavily insulated, and both tanks have digital thermometers Even the 200-liter, which is 53 U.S. gallons, the tank never gets above 27 degrees Celsius or 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
So not bad. Mm-hmm.
I think the high specific heat capacity of water goes a long way to keep them at a level temperature. Luckily, the local weather either picks really hot or really humid. I can't remember any times it's been both. Wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
I wonder how it manages that.
I don't know.
That's really cool.
It is. Except when it's hot.
Well.
Yeah, but I see what you mean. Oh, it's nice that it's not both hot and humid at the same time, because hot and humid are the hardest.
Hot and humid is kind of like drowning. In the bathtub.
Okay.
Because it's wet and it's hot. It's not like drowning in the ocean because it's cold.
Okay.
Okay. I'll quit. And about his frogs.
Uh-huh. We were asking what kind of frogs.
Yes. And I didn't really think that they were cane toads. That's why I said I'm sure Matt would not keep cane toads, considering the severe ecological damage that they wreak. But he says, no, my frogs are not toads. As far as I know, cane toads have not made it to Western Australia yet, which is good news.
Mm-hmm.
It makes for a really hilarious documentary, but it's really not it's not a good situation. We Australians can be cruel to cane toads. They do so much damage to the local flora and fauna that makes us angry. Understandably slow. So, drivers will regularly swerve to run them over on the roads. You know, they actually have a scene of that in the documentary.
They do.
They did it in kind of a humorous way. There is a sport called cane toad golf where the toad replaces the ball. I heard my physiology lecturer talk about the intense security protocols that my university had to use in order... had to use to order in some cane toads for dissection. Australia has many ecological catastrophes from introduced species. We have wild rabbits, goats, pigs, foxes, cane toads, and carp in the rivers. There are other examples I can't think of right now. It's true, which is why importing and exporting is so stringently regulated.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. He says, my two frogs are Littoria murrei, or motorbike frog. I don't know how other people say that.
I think Littoria some people say Morai, but it doesn't matter.
Or a motorbike frog. I got them from a sweet old lady down the road that I got to talking to when she delivered us some mail that was accidentally put in her mailbox, not ours. He sent a photograph.
He did.
Of one of just like a general example of the frog, and he also sent... Didn't he? And then he sent ones of his
in the pond right around. One sitting on a lily pad and one sitting next to the pond.
They're very cute frogs.
They are really cute frogs. And we're going to put those pictures. We'll post them on the site so you can check out his frogs.
And then he says, I shall investigate carbon dioxide injections. Yes, you are right, Kelly. I'm sorry I accidentally wrote quotation marks instead of apostrophes. That's okay. I figured it out. He says, we use apostrophes for feet in Australia, too. Interestingly, aquarium sizes over here are quoted in feet, not centimeters. That would be a really big number. But as a civil and structural design draftsperson, I find it hard to not at least mention the metric measurement. The building industry here always works in millimeters, but that'd make it even more numbers to read out.
Yeah.
And as you all know, I trip over my tongue quite enough, so thank you for sparing me. Says, I like the idea of a sump in the 6-foot tank. I did not make the stand for the 6-foot. It is the 4-foot tank that I made the cabinet for. Okay. The 4-foot will be staying in its current position. Yes, Russ, you are correct. One of the 2x2 sides of the 6-foot tank will be against a wall. So that will offer some opportunities for hiding plumbing.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Here's my new question. Can you please explain to me the various setups for carbon dioxide injection? Thanks, Matt.
Okay. Well, let's do a kind of a quick rundown on that. Okay. First, there's the do-it-yourself yeast one. And most people suggest that with the yeast one, you don't go much over 20 gallons of water.
Do they not work very well in bigger tanks?
But I've heard of some people doing something to help with that. But anyway, they're often considered, because they're a little bit, they don't produce with quite the pressure that some of the other systems do.
The do-it-yourself ones? The soda bottle
the
ones?
Yeast, so do-it-yourself ones. And they also are not quite as regular in terms of output. They can fluctuate in the amount of output based on temperature in the room and various other things and how long it's been since you've refreshed the bottles and so on.
So it's a little bit less standardized and regulated.
Less stable, yeah. And, of course, you're not using the specialized equipment that helps keep it stable and regulated. So there's that. But basically, and I like the Nyberg yeast recipe where you put in 1 2-liter soda bottle, you put 2 cups of water and you, or 2 cups of sugar, just plain old sugar, white sugar, and then you fill up the bottle about 3/4 of the way. You put in a teaspoon or two of any kind of protein powder, and then another teaspoon or two of molasses. If you can get the sulfured kind of molasses, you do that. And then a little bit of bread yeast.
How much yeast? Just a teaspoon or a pinch? Or?
Even just a pinch would be enough, but you could do a teaspoon, it'd be fine. And then after you do it the first time, you just use a little bit of the material from the older bottle, because it's got like yeast in it, and you just keep doing it. And over
you do
time,
all the same ingredients, but just a little bit of the old material instead of putting fresh yeast in.
Right.
Okay.
Put a couple of tablespoons of the old stuff in. It works better than just the yeast and sugar and water solution for several reasons. One of them being that yeast does better if it has proteins and things like that. And there are some trace elements and things in the molasses that help. So that tends to be more stable and longer lasting in terms of production than just plain old sugar. And you just basically find some way to make a seal, and you can use it by, one of the ways that I've done it is just drill a hole in the lid of the soda bottle and stick in a piece of rigid airline tubing and then hot glue it or silicone it tightly so that it's nice
around
and sealed
around
it, but leave, at least 1/2 inch or so
around
sticking
the hole
out
in the tube.
The top, yeah. So then you just attach your tubing to that, lead your tubing the best way that I've found to do it. You can lead it to a diffuser, but is just rig it up with a rubber band or a zip tie or something so that it, when the bubbles of the CO2, you put it lower down than the top of your aquarium somewhere, like on the floor or something behind it or whatever, and so that the tubing goes right into the intake on your filter. And as it does, it gets pulled up through the tube and then hits the impeller and is it splatters into all kinds of tiny bubbles, and those diffuse very quickly into the water of the tank.
Into the water.
And so you get a fair amount of CO2. For such a big tank as he has, I don't know that I would recommend CO2 with a yeast system, just because it would be harder to produce. But if you were to get some of the larger, 3-liter bottles of soda, and you were to put them up in kind of a, you had 4 of them. In the stand, in the cabinet, in the stand underneath there.
So 12 liters of CO2 stuff.
And you rotate them, so you replace one each week. That would tend to keep them stable.
Mm-hmm.
Have 1, 2, 3, 4 and replace one, week two, replace the second one, week three, replace the third one, and so on. So in the system, there's always some fresh ones, because the Nyberg yeast ones can produce for about a month. So if you just use yeast and water and sugar, it takes they run out faster. But I did a system similar to that, just with not 4 3-liter bottles, but with 2 2-liter bottles, and it was pretty stable, because when you unhook the one, you lose pressure for a few minutes, but as soon as you tighten it back up, the one that's been going strong is still going strong, and so it only takes a few minutes to start producing. Within a few hours, the other one starts producing. So if you had 4 big bottles hooked up, you could probably get a decent amount of CO2 in there. I don't know. I haven't tried with such a big one, but I've heard of people doing it in that way, by just having a battery of bottles hooked up to it. Then, of course, there's the one we talked about the other week with the citric acid and the baking soda, which I don't know a lot about. I've done a little research on it, and I'm interested in doing it. But it's basically the valves and everything, because it has a release valve. It's a little bit more complicated, but it's basically...
Is it You don't use the same kind of bottles? Does it come with its own?
You use soda bottles,
too. You still make the bottles and everything yourself?
You get the bottles. You just get soda bottles. You don't make anything else because the top...
You adapt the bottles to the system.
No. The assembly is already everything you need except the bottles themselves.
You don't use the lids?
You don't use the lids.
So it comes with its own thing that's going to screw on the bottle?
Yes.
Okay.
It does. And... there are a couple of different versions of those, but it hooks up to the bottles too, and you have citric acid in one, and you have baking soda in the other. Solutions, they're both in solutions, citric acid and then baking soda. And you have to do a couple of things to make sure that the citric acid is siphoning into the baking soda, but it's not too hard to do. And then that, it tends to be more regular, less messy than the baking, the yeast.
Yes? Sorry. The citric acid baking soda one, does it come in a kit that you buy, or is there just instructions out there on the internet saying,
you can find get
this and
online,
this and this?
But or? It's a kit. It's a kit.
Where do you buy the kit?
You can buy them online. I don't know of
you
any
could
pet stores
you just search for citric acid CO2 kit.
Yes.
Okay.
And you buy them online. I know they have them. eBay sells them and so on. So you can get them that way. And you have to get the CO or the citric acid someplace. You can often buy it in canning supplies, where you'd buy canning supplies in a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of expensive there. If you buy it online, you can, like Amazon has it, for much cheaper. You have to buy a fair quantity of it, but
it's not
if
you're doing
very
something like this, it seems like you'd go through a fair amount.
You'd be using it, so it's not like a big deal. And so that system, of course, I haven't tried that out yet. It's fairly new. But I've read a little bit about it, and that you'd probably have to have more than just two liter bottles again on such a big tank. But it might be worth at least looking into. Then there's the semi-automatic CO2 kit, where there are a couple of different ways to do it. But basically, you have a CO2, pressurized CO2 bottle, and it kind of releases the CO2. The system is quite a bit more complicated. Releases CO2, but you have to have a way of shutting it off during the night, because CO2, of course, affects the pH. And because it's putting in so much CO2, it can be dangerous to have it releasing CO2 at night, because the plants are not using the CO2. They're not taking it in and using it. And because they're not, it can build up in the water and cause a drop in pH that's too much. Be dangerous for your fish. And so you turn that one off at night. There's the most automatic version will actually monitor the pH levels in your water continuously and only release CO2 when they are within a certain range.
Interesting.
So that you can maintain a stable range of CO2 and pH all the time. Kind of nice. I haven't done a whole lot with that. I haven't done anything with it. Because the only...
Those get fairly costly.
They are. It is in US dollars, it's depending on which kit you get, you know. But if you get one of the high-end kits, it's a couple hundred dollars for everything you need. But the nice thing about it is over time, a couple of things, like this is... Tom has one of those. Tom in Provo.
The automatic ones?
Yep, he got one of those. And... Over time, you just go fill up your CO2 cartridge, and that's the only expense, really, once you've got it going. You don't have to keep buying sugar or citric acid or whatever. And buying one of those cartridges is pretty cheap.
Where do you get them?
Depending on which type you get. But one that's popular nowadays is you just get a paintball one.
What's a paintball one?
CO2 cartridges for paintball guns is what they use
Is that what they use to propel the paintballs?
Yeah. It's pressurized CO2. Okay. And so you can just go get this little... CO2, what is it called? The little tank, and you just screw it on to the gun, or you can screw it into the CO2 system. And it lasts for a long time. You don't have to do much with it. You just screw it on.
So you don't have
to depending on the size of the tank you're getting, whether it's a paintball one or one used for like pressurizing carbonated drinks or whatever, it can be months before you need to do anything with it once it's all set up, so... And those they're a lot more regular because you can not only gauge, but you can choose the level of CO2 you want and just aim for it based on the pH in the water. And it'll be constantly monitored, and you don't have to worry about it, as long as the system's working. I've heard of horror stories when the system goes awry and releases huge amounts of CO2 in the water, and the pH crashes and kills all the fish.
And that's not so good.
But I think in general, it's able to monitor things and take care of it. So hopefully that's a little bit. I wish I could tell you more about the more advanced systems, but I've only used really the yeast CO2. But I have found it to be amazingly effective on the small scale that I've used it at, anywhere from about 4.5 gallons to 20 gallons of various tanks of those sizes. And within a few days of putting one of those yeast systems on the tank, you notice a huge difference in the plants. They do so much better. Even fish that like a little bit of acid in their water, you can see a difference in the fish. Like neon tetras, cardinal tetras.
They get really
bright.
They just
glow when they have the CO2 in the water. It makes such a difference. So I've been really thinking about the citric acid system. I'd love to try that out, and it has the advantage of not having to worry about yeast.
Because the yeast is stinky.
Yeah, every time you open a bottle and change it, you smell it. And it doesn't last that long. It's not like you always smell the CO2 or anything, but every time you change the bottle, which, you know, I did every week or two, you noticed. And once in a while, if you happen to leave a bottle sealed for an hour or so, not a good idea.
Sealed, not hooked up to the tank.
Not hooked up to the tank and sealed. Not a good idea. I don't recommend ever doing it. And I remember doing it once, and we had a huge
not
mess.
On
it exploded. Yeah. Of course, not on purpose, but not safe, not a good idea. And it exploded all over. I mean, I opened it because I knew it was going to be a problem. I didn't want it to be highly pressurized and explode, because it could have, possibly. Even though soda bottles are made to withstand a fair amount of pressure. But I opened it up just a little bit, and it just blew all over the place. It was all over my face. It was all over the wall.
Did you take it outside before you opened it? I don't even remember.
I just remember once it happening in Hawaii, and it blew up, and it got on the wall, got on the floor, got on, I think, the parakeet cage. It was all over my face. It was a mess. Anyway, so.
Very exciting, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to Tony New York.
Mm-hmm.
Says, hello, Aquarimax. I wanted to share some ideas regarding a fish tank as a room divider. Which we talked about that last week?
With Matt. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Oh, because that's right, because he was going to hide the... Okay.
Yep.
One idea for hiding plumbing would be to run water through the ceiling to the tank for water changes. The ceiling of the room or the ceiling of the tank?
Ceiling of the room.
Oh, okay. So, like, just put another pipe in up there.
Mm-hmm.
I will probably do something similar when I create my fish room divider. In my case, I found that it is easy to move water this way using a 1.4-inch OD. I don't know what these initials mean.
Outer diameter.
Ah. / 0.170-inch
inner diameter.
Length of polyethylene tubing and attaching this to a faucet diverter. Both pieces are easy to get a hold of and inexpensive. If you're lucky enough to have ceiling tiles, that's true, those would be helpful.
Like we did in the other house.
Yeah, then running the tube through the ceiling and dropping it down to the tank is easy. It is like changing water with a python. To make this work, probably better not to change large volumes of water at a time, since you'll have to dechlorinate it in the tank, and also because the temperature might not be a perfect match. Unless you have to treat your water somehow, i.e. diluting it with RO water along the way, this should help out. You could probably even store the tube in the ceiling when it is out of use, though I'd be tempted to leave it set up all the time. What I love about this solution is that everything works on water pressure, so no electricity needed to move the water.
That is nice. That kind of reminds me of what Ken, the Prince of Ponds, had going in his tank.
Mm-hmm.
He had water that would run through a system through a carbon block so that it was dechlorinated.
Mm-hmm.
Because the carbon block pulled out all the junk out of the water. And then it went through a tube. It sounded much like this. We had a tube running into the tank all the time and another tube running out the tank. And he had drilled a hole through his windowsill or something like that. And then just outside. So
the pipe just went outside?
It was continuous water change. It was slow, low volume water change, but mm-hmm. It was continuous change every day. He didn't have to do anything.
That's nice.
It was just always changing. I can't remember what the percentage of water change he was doing every day, but it added up. You know, it was always just kind of flowing out slowly.
It's pretty cool. Says if you wanted to go all out with hiding your equipment, you could hide everything in the wall. Building a partition wall might not be too hard. Maybe you could add a little service door and put a picture over it. Here's a video I found online, Matt, that you may enjoy.
Which I haven't been able to check out yet, but I want to.
And he says, let me know how it all goes. I am very interested and would like to learn from your process, too. P.S. I am thinking about building my own aquarium stand. I am sure I will be looking back on this project of yours, too, Matt.
Put up his plans on the website.
So we will put the video up so you guys can see it.
Yeah, I'll put the link up, and I'm looking forward to checking it out myself. All right. I think that's about it, isn't it?
I think so. For this week.
Thank you to all our contributors, and until next time.
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.